Welcome to In the Key of D, Using Digital to Transform Your Business, a show that explores why digital matters and how it helps entrepreneurs, business leaders, and digital professionals make their businesses better. I'm your host, Kathy Hollenhorst, president of Creatus, and I'm joined by my co-host, Gino Giovanelli, who is a leading digital marketing expert and an award-winning professor at the University of St. Thomas. In the Key of D is proudly sponsored by Creatus, the go-to digital and creative marketing firm that helps companies get more work done. And now, as part of the 24/7 family of businesses, Creatus offers an even broader range of services, including temporary and permanent staffing, and of course, continued outsourced project work from the Creatus studio. Welcome to today's episode, which will be a fascinating discussion with one of my absolute favorite entrepreneurs and marketers. We'll do a deep dive into how he launched his own company and how digital supports his e-commerce business and overall operation. Joining us to do all that is Jake Miller, the founder of Fellow, which is a product design company based in San Francisco, whose mission is to help people brew ridiculously good coffee at home. Jake started Fellow in 2013 after completing his MBA from the Stanford Graduate School of Business. In fact, Fellow was founded out of the D School at Stanford. Prior to heading to Stanford, I had a chance to steal Jake from the marketing agency he worked at, and he joined my marketing team at Caribou Coffee as a brand manager. At Caribou, he expanded his knowledge of coffee and related products from the ground, or should I say grounds, up. Gino, I know Jake has an undergraduate degree from the University of St. Thomas, probably before you were teaching there. But I also know you got to work with Jake at Caribou Coffee, right?
Oh, yeah. Jake and I, we go way back. We worked on the evolution of CariboucoFoffee.com together. And we also got to work with Amazon to use Amazon as a distribution partner of Caribou. And that was a super exciting time in the business. So let's fast forward 10 years and we welcome Jake to the studio.
Kathy, Gino, it is an absolute honor to be here. It's funny to think back. I mean, I think we first met, what, maybe 15 years ago now. And I was a young, bright-eyed kid. And Kathy, you took a chance on me. Thankful then and thankful now. And this is pretty cool to come full circle and now be a guest on your podcast.
I pride myself on identifying good talent early. So it's been a great journey. I'm so glad you can join us today. And let's get started. We have many things we want to talk to you about, but let's start with the company you founded, Fellow. Tell us a little bit. What inspired you to start Fellow, and what is it all about?
Every great company has an origin story. So Fellow's origin story really goes back to, one, kind of Jake is a five-year-old kid. Like, it is just in me to run companies, right? Like, there's no other possible career for me. I have to be an entrepreneur, right? So you start there. Then you need to find something you're passionate about. And, you know, I can really thank Caribou Coffee for that. You know, I was a brand manager there, got to work with the Roastmasters, got to travel to Origin, and really fell in love with specialty coffee. You know, and the kind of the third leg of the stool would be just a personal passion for product design. Mm-hmm. So you smash those three things together, you know, and the outcome is Fellow.
Fascinating combination. I love that it goes back to when you were five.
Right.
Tell us a little bit. What is Fellow all about?
So at Caribou, you know, and so I left Caribou to pursue an MBA. So 2 years full time as a student. The opportunity that I saw at Caribou was this: if you looked at the specialty coffee market, the actual roasters, there was this elevation of kind of what they were doing. There was this third wave movement going on the bean side. There was a gap in that on the equipment side, right? So you had people roasting incredible coffees and brewing them at home, but the equipment that they were using to brew those coffees, you know, were invented and designed 50 years ago. So really, that first product from Fellow was trying to close the gap between where the market was for coffee and where the market was for equipment. And for us, it's like from day one, the goal was to help people brew great coffee at home, right? So that first product for us was kind of our take on, we tried to invent a new way to brew coffee. It was a combination French press and pour over, this dual chambered French press thing. And we turned to Kickstarter. So Kickstarter was a big part of kind of early fellow for us. So yeah, I had graduated. We posted this product on Kickstarter and we raised $200,000 in 30 days.
Wow.
Pre-sales from customers, right? So this is 2013. I say no to the big time jobs coming out of grad school. I'm like, this is the future. Little did I know it would take about 2 years and about $300,000 just to deliver those first Kickstarter units.
Mm-hmm.
So we were in the hole pretty quick, but you know, I'm thankful that first product got us off the ground.
Got it. So Jake, you've been running Fellow for about 8 years now with massive growth. Congrats on the way on that. What's been the biggest challenge? And what would you do differently if you were to start Fellow today?
Yeah. Early on, I think that the challenges change kind of as we've grown and scaled, but kind of the biggest challenges early on were on the engineering and manufacturing side, right? Like Fellow designs and manufactures physical products.
Mm-hmm.
My background is in marketing, right? Like that's pure arrogance to think that I could figure this out. So I didn't have a co-founder. If I had to do this again, like the person next to me on day one would have been an engineer with a deep knowledge in manufacturing. I didn't have that. So it was, you know, it took me two years to kind of design, set up a supply chain for the first product. And it was, you know, it was a painful 2 years. You know, I think the year two, I spent Christmas and New Year's in the factory, which my family loved. So that was certainly the challenge. The benefit of that, though, is that was 2 years where I just learned so much about how to design products and manufacture products at scale that I think that's paid off many, many times over, you know, for the last 6 years, right? So I don't know if I'd trade it, given that I think it's actually helped accelerate product development for our team.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about that, you know, because that focus and that expansion of your product portfolio has really driven your growth. So talk to us about how you made that happen and also how digital helps you create and launch new products successfully.
It always goes back to that mission. Like, what are we trying to accomplish for our customer? We very much think about the job they're trying to do, the job to be done, and that is brew great coffee at home. So for us, thankfully, you don't just need one product, right? Like, let's say you're excited about making pour over coffee at home. You need a pour over kettle, you need a brewer, you need a scale, you need a grinder, you need great drinkware to enjoy the product that you brew. So the portfolio expansion has just been us trying to meet the needs of our customers, trying to meet the needs of that job to be done. Right. So it's not rocket science over here, right? We get very close to our customer. We understand their true needs, wants, and desires, and then we design for them.
Did you do a lot of research around identifying that customer, or because you are one of those users? You know, I'm just curious, as a startup, how much investment you made in what you might do on a corporate side of big customer research work?
Yeah, we do very little big customer research work. We were founded out of the D School at Stanford.
Yeah.
And the D School is all about human-centered design.
Okay.
Right? Get as close to your customers as possible. Empathize, ideate, prototype, iterate. I don't think we have, you know, certainly in the early days, we've gotten better, you know, as the team has grown. We didn't do, you know, big market studies and customer research. You know, we found people who loved specialty coffee, you know, and we spent a lot of time with them. And when you're really, really small, you know, us 7-8 years ago, you don't really care how big the market is because you're so small, you know, whatever you launch, as long as you know that customer is excited about it, you're going to be successful.
Got it. Hey, Jake, from an e-commerce perspective, obviously you were very successful at selling online to Fellow product or through Fellow products. Tell us a little bit about your strategic approach to selling, not necessarily at the transaction level, but with your partners, your wholesale partners, your global partners, and things like that.
So on the distribution side, there's a spectrum, right? On the one end, you have the kind of more legacy players, the Breville's of the world, KitchenAid's, Cuisinart's, and basically all of their business is through wholesale partners, mm-hmm. right? They're selling through Williams-Sonoma, Nordstrom, Crate & Barrel. They've got great relationships there. They don't have great relationships with their direct customers. You know, the other end of that spectrum is these kind of digitally native, pure D2C brands, right? You can think of Warby Parker and Casper and Allbirds. And you know, those brands have evolved a bit over time. Right. But certainly, like when Warby's a great example, it's like everything they do is directly to their customer. So that's the spectrum. From day one, Fellow's been right in the middle of that. We never raised a bunch of money, right? If you're Warby Parker, you know, who's raised, I think, $500 million to date, you've got cash to acquire those direct customers. We didn't. So there's real value for us in being in Williams-Sonoma, in Crate & Barrel, you know, in the best coffee shops in the world. On the digital side, there's enormous value in having deep direct relationships with our customers, right? Through fellowproducts.com, through our retail store. So we're trying to find the right mix. And then over time, figure out how we can create kind of deeper, more valuable direct relationships with those customers, however they find us.
Got it.
So if any of our listeners, which there are many out there that are thinking maybe of launching their own brand and business, maybe using e-commerce, what advice do you have them on direct-to-consumer using their own social properties and website and or through the wholesale distribution or some combination? Like, where should they start?
I think what the barriers to entry on the direct side have just been smashed, right? Like you can set up a Shopify store in a weekend. That wasn't the case certainly 10 years ago, right? So the advice there is stand it up, right? Like stand it up, see what happens, see if you can make that work. And then be strategic about expansion from there. Like there's real value to that wholesale relationship, right? But it's a ton of work and it's a completely different type of business. So Fellow, like I think probably almost failed in the early days because we tried to do too much. Like we have a wildly complicated business that has our own website. We sell to thousands of retailers. We're in 40 plus countries. We operate a retail store. And each of those is a different business that doesn't have a ton of synergies across them. You need separate teams for them. So to your question specifically, Kathy, it's like, you know, focus on one, make sure you have confidence that you can do that well, and then kind of strategically step out from there.
Let's dive a little deeper into your, what I would call that brick and mortar location. I think it's in San Fran, right? And I believe based on your website, it's called the Fellow Store and Playground. It seems to me that you'd built that more to be a whole customer experience venue, not just a brick and mortar retail store. Tell us more about that.
Exactly. Yeah, this was really fun, and I'm very excited about the future of retail for Fellow. COVID certainly punched us in the face, and that part of our business has been struggling for the last 2 years.
Uh-huh.
But the vision here was a couple things. One, let's create a place where customers can come and experience specialty coffee, right? Not see our products in person, because we have those retailer relationships, right? We're in thousands of stores. So yes, like you can buy our products here, their products are on display and they're beautifully displayed. I think what's special about the store is that you can come in and at any given time, you can buy 22 grams of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our brew guides will actually walk you through how to make a pour over or a French press or an AeroPress right there in the store. So you get both kind of a mini lesson on how to use our stuff. And not only do you get to see them in person, you get to use them. And that's been really special. I remember the very first weekend we were open, I was playing the role as one of the brew guides, helping our customers out. And this gentleman comes in and he had been buying coffee from Blue Bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so he goes in, gets a pour over. He has it made for him, you know, every day for the last who knows how many years, right? And so he has an appreciation for specialty coffee. He values specialty coffee, but he hasn't taken that experience home. We do the class with him and it's a 2-3 minute class. And his eyes light up. And you could just see it in his face. He's like, I can do this at home. I can't believe this. Right. And he leaves with $600-$700 worth of stuff.
Even better.
Like, yeah. Right. Even better. But like, you know, just and like just so happy. And he like marches out of the store. And I know he was just going straight home to like brew coffee.
Awesome. Awesome.
Well, yeah, because I am a bit of a coffee connoisseur and having spent some years at Caribou, but I am, you know, it's a little intimidating to have all the right equipment and to know how to do it correctly at home. You know, so what a great idea to create that experience and then have your brew guides to teach them how to do it. I love that.
Right. And until COVID comes along.
Yeah, until COVID.
Which
yeah.
Jake, I wanted to take that opportunity to go a little deeper on that. I'm sure it had a huge impact on your operation. Did it end up shutting down Playground, or what was the effect ultimately of COVID on your business?
Yeah. So thankfully the retail stores, it's a very small part of our total business. It did shut down for, I believe, 7-8 months or so.
Okay.
But the rest of Fellow pushed on and COVID, it's kind of, there's two sides to this story. On the one end, you've got more people at home, right? You've got more people brewing at coffee at home, more people working from home, right? So there are some very real tailwinds there that have benefited Fellow and, you know, certainly other kitchen brands and home brands over the last 18 months. On the other side of that, we manufacture in Asia, right? I've been to China, to Taiwan, across Asia to, you know, I've visited every single factory we work with. I've probably been there 20 to 25 times over the last 8 years. No one on our team has been able to go for the last 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So how do you, and we've got many products in development. Like, how do you design new products without being able to be at your factory? Right. How do you ensure quality and consistency on all sustaining production without having anyone there? So real challenges there. So what we did there was basically month two of COVID, we said, this isn't going away. We need to hire a team in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, fast forward 18 months, we have 12 Fellow employees that are, you know, living in Asia right now that are able to right now during COVID visit our factories regularly, support in development, support in sustaining production. So that was one of our better kind of strategic moves, and certainly one of the moves that have allowed us to, I think, weather this COVID supply chain storm better than most. And then the other kind of effect of COVID that, you know, you're seeing play out here now with price increases, and I'm sure the listeners are starting to notice this.
Yeah.
All the input costs are rising, right? The labor costs are up. The raw material costs are up. So all of our BOM costs, the bill of material costs, have increased. And then the freight costs to get the products to where we need to get them are up 4-5x, right? So we typically pay, for example, think about a container of product going from China to the U.S. That's typically about $4,000. We're right now paying about $20,000 a container.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. So that can, that translates to $7-$8 a unit, depending on what you're shipping. So you've got really, really, you know, very real gross margin pressures.
Let's build on that, because I do have several colleagues here who run up manufacturing operations in Minnesota. They're facing those same price increase, or if they can even get the raw material. And we just had a conversation recently about, well, how do you take that price increase, whether direct to consumer or wholesale channel? Because it's really not, I mean, it's almost like a cost sharing as opposed to a price increase. But, you know, so what are you doing about that? Your costs have gone up, what you just described.
Yeah.
And so how are you handling that?
Yeah, so this is where we did do that big company market research.
Mm-hmm.
We did a number of pricing studies just to determine willingness to pay, right? Essentially the elasticity at various price points of the core portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a bunch of research to give us confidence that we could take price. So we're strategically going to take price and have took price on a few items over the next few months to try to offset those BOM increases. We don't think we can take all of it, right? So we are also betting that, hey, the freight market's not going to be 5x for the next 2 years, right? So we are, in the short term, sacrificing some margin in the hopes that some of those costs decrease kind of post-COVID.
I know you're also now on the coffee side in addition to the product side.
Yep.
So has your availability of that on the coffee side of things still maintained? I know that some of the, probably your raw materials on the product side are probably limited.
Yeah.
Actually, we'll comment. Like, what haven't you been able to get and how's it going?
Yeah. So on the coffee side, just a quick background. So everything we do goes back to helping our customers brew great coffee at home. And what we've found is that even if you have the best products in the world and the coffee you're brewing is bad, the end result is going to be bad coffee, right? Like, you can't make bad coffee taste great.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, how can we better complete that solution for our customer? And that led us to actually playing this role of curator for our customers to present them with the best coffees we can find right now in the U.S. So Fellow sits on top of what is hundreds of roasters that we have relationships with due to our wholesale business selling our products. We have a tasting panel, and that tasting panel tastes a whole bunch of coffees every week. And then they pick their favorite for that week. And then we offer that favorite, typically exclusive coffee to our customers every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Via text message. It's a text order. Although the kind of macro coffee supply chain has been impacted,
mm-hmm.
it hasn't been impacted for every single origin and every single roaster. So we're able to essentially partner with roasters that have supply on hand for that given week. COVID has not yet really impacted the coffee part of our business.
Got it. Hey, so Jake, so far you've covered human-centered design that influences product design. We've touched on e-commerce. We've touched on retail. Can you touch on how much you leverage digital marketing to grow your sales?
Digital can mean a whole bunch of different things. It ultimately goes back to digital for us is how we create those deep, direct, personal value-add relationships with our customers, right? We don't want this to be transactional. We want it to be, you know, almost conversational. Digital is that for us, right? Mm-hmm. So whether that's our website, whether that's social, whether it's email, whether it's this new conversational text platform that we're building to order coffee, it all goes back to forming that relationship. And yes, like we run a lot of paid ads, just like most D2C brands. And like, so on the paid ad side, it's having a really good understanding of what the LTV of that customer is, and then what the cost is to acquire, making sure that ratio makes sense, you know, having enough faith in the LTV and the cohort analysis to say, I can maybe take a slight contribution loss on the first transaction because I have confidence that they're going to come back for transaction two in the next 6 months. All of that comes together for our digital experience.
Sure.
With the kind of the other big bucket of that being content and education. So again, going back to how do I help this customer brew great coffee? They also need to know how to use this stuff, right? Like, we're selling them tools and they're not complicated, but there is a learning curve. So digital for us, is a chance for us to provide that content, that education, and get customers actually searching for us and coming to us for advice versus us like just chasing after them with paid ads.
Love it.
Two-part question on that one. Are you doing any what I will call the traditional marketing? So broadcast, radio, any of that? Gino just gave me a face. But also, and then how many countries are you actively marketing in? Social, maybe digitally or traditionally?
Yeah, traditional marketing, we do very little.
Mm-hmm.
We just last month did a direct mailer, right? That was a big step for us.
I know. Sounds expensive, yeah.
It was very expensive. But direct mailers are cool again. So
there you go.
Exactly.
It was fun. So we it was a smaller test for us. We sent a mailer. It was this really cool, probably 20-page catalog that we designed, telling this full coffee story. We sent that mailer to 100,000 of our current customers, and about 50,000 prospects, lookalike customers that the agency that we worked with was able to identify for us. And then since we know their shipping address, we can understand their kind of purchase behavior kind of post-mailer. And that was really fun for us. We're still waiting on some of the results, but as digital advertising becomes more challenging, you know, iOS 14 really kind of made this whole world more challenging, and basically overnight, we need to look at other ways to get customers back, to acquire new customers.
Mm-hmm. I do know you have some roots in sponsorships and creating marketing partnerships. How have you incorporated that into what you're doing with Fellow?
Yeah, we haven't done kind of traditional sponsorships, right? So sponsorships for us are influencer campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
So it's certainly a lot of work by the team. And we've got a couple of people on the team dedicated to this, of just making sure that the right influencers are using our products. And we really don't pay those influencers. I know there's a lot of brands out there that will write checks and say, here, promote this. We want to find people, whether it's in the coffee community or in the design community, who just love our stuff. And in exchange, maybe we get them that stuff for free. On the sponsorship side, you're not going to believe this, but there are these coffee competitions, right? There's the World Barista Championship. There's the World Brewers Championship at the kind of local, state, national, regional, global level. And you have thousands of competitors around the world.
Who knew?
Who knew, right? if you ever get a chance to like check this out, it's great. There's very entertaining kind of performances, really, that are months or years in the making. And so we've worked really hard to make sure that the best competitors in the world have our stuff. You know, so for example, last week with the World Brewers Championship was in Milan. The winner was using a Fellow kettle.
Nice.
You know, in 2019, both the World Barista Champion and the World Brewers Champion used Fellow gear to win the World Championships. So when we think of sponsorship, it's more at the individual level, getting the products into the right people's hands.
That is cool. We got to check out those competitions.
Yes, we do.
We'll see within
that.
All right, Jake. Well, we have a couple of wrap-up questions, which we'll do in a minute. But first, we are going to pivot to our extremely fun and interesting part of the show that we call Rapid Fire. There's our sound effects. Gino and I will ask you some questions. You're going to give us your rapid fire answers, and that's it. All right, Jake, are you ready?
I'll do my best.
You'll do your best. Great. Someone start the clock. All right, Jake, if you weren't doing what you're doing today as a business owner and entrepreneur, what would you be?
I would be an architect.
Nice. Jake, here's an easy one. Mac or PC?
I am a Mac guy.
There you go.
All right. What three words do you use to describe yourself?
Oh, God. Kathy, I hate talking about myself. You know that. Driven, creative, witty.
Nice.
There you go. And what is your favorite adult beverage other than coffee?
I got on a gin kick, Negronis. Ooh,
there you go.
Very nice. And what is your most interesting hidden talent?
I know a few good magic tricks.
Oh, nice.
There you go. And then to end on our musical theme, who is your favorite band to see live in concert?
I saw Metallica live in eighth grade, and I don't think that can ever be topped.
And your ears are still ringing.
Exactly.
Well, there you have it. That's Rapid Fire with Jake Miller. Jake, you win absolutely nothing for playing our game, but it sure was fun. It was nice to get to know you a bit better.
Okay. So, Jake, just a couple wrap-up questions. The first one is, how do you stay current on all things digital?
Talk to my team. Like, I think as the kind of the job of the CEO is making sure you've got the right people in the right seats. And certainly on the digital side, it's making sure we have just great talent there. So that's, I think that's probably the quick answer.
Yeah, makes sense.
Very good. So look into your crystal ball for us. What's the next big thing that our listeners and Gino and I should be on the lookout for in terms of digital?
I'm excited to see how kind of the digital evolves for Fellow specifically, from transactional, from, you know, customer acquisition cost to like, did I get this person to convert on the website to how we can use digital to further strengthen those deep, direct value add relationships and provide value to the customer above and beyond just, you know, here, you know, buy this at 15% off.
Excellent. All right. Great. Well, Jake, if someone would like to contact you to learn a bit more, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, easy. My email's just jake@fellowproducts.com. Happy to field any questions.
Excellent. And we'll be sure to include your contact information as well as some of the things you've referenced in the show notes to make it easy for listeners to access that. So with that, Jake, wonderful session. Thank you so much. Just a pleasure to have you on in the Key of D.
Thanks, Jake. Good to talk to you again.
Kathy, Gino, this was so much fun. Thank you.
Well, Gino, as I expected, another wonderful episode. I have multiple pages of notes, but what were some of your takeaways?
I have five of them, believe it or not. I loved what he said right out of the chute. He goes, I was a marketer faced with the need to do product design, and I used pure arrogance to figure it out. I mean, that's the sign of an entrepreneur.
Yeah, and he's not an arrogant person.
No, he's not. No, he's very humble, but he's like, but sometimes those entrepreneurs just need to just go for it and swing hard and just do stuff they're not comfortable doing. And that's what makes them an entrepreneur.
His lesson, if I recall, was if he could go back, he would have considered taking a co-founder early.
Right.
Perhaps somebody who was a product engineer to just make that go a little more smoothly.
The next thing I wrote is I like how he mentioned that he didn't do any big market research. Yeah. And I kind of gasped when he said that. I'm like, oh my gosh. But then he said but the key to human-centered design is to get as close to the customer as possible. And in a niche market, these coffee fanatics, you really just need to get with a handful of those and ask them very closely, you know, what do you need? What do you want? And rather than the big market research. So.
And I have heard of human-centered design, but I wrote down the pieces or the steps, at least that he articulated, which are emphasize, ideate, prototype, and innovate. And how do you go to market quickly?
Right.
Not surprising. I do hear that from some of my other entrepreneurial friends about not doing, well, they don't have the time or the money maybe to do big customer research.
Right.
Up front. They do certainly identify that core target. I thought it was really interesting, though, when we talk supply chain and cost increases and the freight costs and all those things he shared, which is they did choose to pause and say, okay, now we really do need to do more formal research on the price ton. I assume they have a fairly price insensitive base, high-end coffee, they did go through, do some research to understand, and then through that made decisions on passing on a few price increases to certain segments, not in other cases, and hoping that the market will turn around and you know, future they'll be able to recover those increases in cost.
Right. Well, because when you need to do it, you need to do the research. It does take a lot of time. So if you don't need to in certain areas, then don't do that. You know what I mean? So. I liked how he brought up that digital marketing is more than just driving transactions, and it's about driving really customer relationships. Yeah. It just elevates that whole conversation because so many people just think about getting clicks on search engines that drive people through your conversion funnel and you make lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
We forget that those are people that are doing the clicks and people that are going through our shopping cart and buying a product that gets shipped to them. So I liked how he elevated that.
Well, I have to believe in a successful small firm like him versus you and I have both been on the corporate side, you know, what translates to the money is the transactional. How many sales do you have, Gino, today?
Right.
And you know, so we're justifying these investments in the website. The building of the relationships and curating those online communities takes a little longer.
Right.
So the ROI might be a little bit future state. But that's, of course, that's why he's had the growth that he's had. What is he up to now? Like 75 employees from over 8 years and continuing to grow, probably. What do you say? Maybe even getting bigger next year. So
totally.
Pretty phenomenal success story.
Yeah. And even when we talk about customers, we usually talk about them in terms of the number of them, not the relationships with the people. So again, I love how he elevated that conversation. My fourth one was, I liked how many times we came back to our mission about helping people brew the best coffee in their homes.
Ridiculously good coffee.
Ridiculously good coffee. And that mission helped make those tough decisions. And I think so many companies kind of give the mission kind of lip service.
Yeah.
It sits in a PowerPoint slide number 5 and deck number 10 and sits in some hard drive somewhere. It feels like with Jake, the mission is alive. And it is almost like that person in the room that you go to for advice.
Yeah. He's
almost, you know what I mean? It's like a human mission statement.
Well, and we know he started on the product side with that combination brewer that he mentioned and then right. did some product expansion. But staying true to that mission of helping people create ridiculously good coffee at home led them to the coffee side. And my notes on that, now he said, well, they represent or kind of curate relationships with all the roasters because they needed to add that coffee, the ground coffee or whole bean coffee element into their product line to help their customers continue to develop that experience at home.
Because at the end of the day, Kathy, you can't make bad coffee taste good at home.
That's very true. Very true. A couple of things that I noticed and wrote down on the marketing side that I think are phenomenal. One is the, if I'm going to get started and I want to have a e-commerce store, how do I do it? How do I get started? What's his advice?
Right.
And remember he said, well, you know, stand it up. You know, what did he say? Shopify can, you can set something up over a weekend.
Weekend, yeah. Yep.
Something like that. So try it, get it going and then see. And then, but look to that wholesale or those distribution channels that can support you because it'll expand your reach. Although I think his comment was that wholesale site, it's a little bit harder, a little bit more complicated to get going.
Yeah. And I didn't write this down in my notes, but it just triggered what you said, triggered when we talked about his wholesale partners. A lot of companies struggle with when they sell direct, that sometimes these partners almost
yes.
be, they're considered competitors, but they're also partners too. And we had the same problem at Radisson with travel agents. It's like, you know, we love the travel agents to get us business we wouldn't have got otherwise, but we also like to get it direct because then we don't have to pay the commission. So that's, I thought he did a nice job of balancing the need or the desire to sell direct, but realized that a certain amount of business is going to come through those partners.
Yeah, and truly treating them as partners.
Right.
You know,
right.
We want you to win. We want to be successful. We are going to sell direct. How do we collectively, you know, improve the brand overall? The other thing I thought was phenomenal was the use of influencers.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of brands today, how do you find those people who love you and how do you enable them to tell the story for you? And so they have that in their model
right.
and they found those people who can promote, who are experts and can promote and talk about Fellow and they don't pay them. Because I think
right.
that's like, well, let's see, do I pay you to talk about me or not? And these are just organic relationship
right.
Relationships that they leverage with Fellow. And the other piece and how on the sponsorship side, how they get their brand story told
right.
is through those competitions.
Right.
Which I haven't seen any of those. Wasn't what it's called, the World's Brewer
yeah,
competition.
Yeah, we got to get on that tour. Yeah.
And then he either you know made it happen that they were actually winning and using Fellow products, which is
right.
I mean, what a wonderful way to tell their story and to show and stay true to that mission. That
right.
We are all about helping you brew great coffee.
And it's an authentic story. It's not a paid story. So hopefully the customer base realizes that it is what it is, and it's true to what it is. It's not
yeah.
a paid. Endorsement,
yeah.
if you will.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Celebrity yep. paid within that. And then the final thing on the marketing side, which really stuck with me, was the program. And people should go to their website, and we'll put it in the show notes. I think it's fellowproducts.com, but their text-to-order program. So as they're curating the whole bean coffee side of it, they have a panel of expert roasters. They do a favorite coffee, I think is how it works. They post what that recommendation is on Tuesday. We as consumers then can order it via text,
right.
and they're now using the text medium
right.
to create a community with just in time. I think it's Fellow Drops you can sign up for, but it's a really really cool example of how you use the text channel to build relationships and generate demand for your product.
Totally, I mean it's amazing where this company has gone from, and I guess my last thought is something that he said early on, and he said that Kathy took a chance on him. And I really believe that this company came out of, sometimes we just need those people to take chances on us. You brought him into Caribou. He fell in love with the brand. Remember we talked about the three-legged
yeah.
stool, loving coffee, right? He may not have found that passion if you hadn't taken a chance on him. And I, when I teach at St. Thomas, the first day of class, I kind of go through my background. And I tell people about you, Kathy, and I tell people that you took a chance on me and you hired me at Radisson. And I tell my students, I had no business being hired by Radisson. I did not. I was underqualified, clearly.
You were an engineer. Come on.
But you took a chance on me. And my career got to where it's at right now because of you, too. And then just to have Jake say that again, I was like, well, you know, there's a lot of Jakes and Ginos out there that people you poured into that then you took a chance on that now have grown into great careers. And I think that's an important message for our listeners is
yeah.
that where we have a chance to pay it forward. Because right now I turn around, my job as a teacher is to pour into my students and take chances on them and helping them find jobs when I refer them to Creatus or whoever to help them start their careers out. You planted it in us and we're planting it in our next generation. So
that is, thank you. And that's very cool. And, you know, we're all facing, us business leaders are facing the great resignation, right? So migration of talent right now. And I think to your point, the takeaway is, for those of us that are in a position, take chances. You don't always, the raw talent can be molded and just, you know, and not always exactly obvious for someone coming in, but also take care of your people. You know, there's a war for talent right now. And so make sure you're bringing in those new thinkers who can expand and grow their career, but also take care of the people you have, because that's what you need to make the business work coming out of the chaos of the last 18 months.
Amen. Amen, amen on that.
Well, it's a phenomenal story with Jake, and we'll hopefully get back to him and hear more. But as always, Gino, so nice to be on this journey with you.
I agree, Kathy, and just looking forward to the next one. Thanks for joining us for this episode of In the Key of D, Using Digital to Transform Your Business.
I'm your host, Kathy Hollenhorst.
And I'm your co-host, Gino Giovanelli. And again, we would like to thank our sponsor, Creatus, who is making this and every episode of In the Key of D possible.
To learn more, go to our website, creatus.com. That's creatis.com/podcast.
And if you liked today's episode, please be sure to subscribe to In the Key of D and tell your friends. You can subscribe on any major podcast platform.
Thanks for listening to In the Key of D.
And now for the encore. Hold your applause, please. We can't leave without thanking the rest of our band who helped make this podcast really sing. Keeping us in the right key is rock and roll producer, musical polyglot, and recording wizard, Tom Forlitti. All right, it's Forlitti, but whatever. Helping us harmonize the web and digital elements is our content and marketing troubadour, Seth Conover. Our podcast coordinating conductor is Christina Sagar. Our theme song is written and performed by Marco Giovanelli, which is played, unsurprisingly, in the key of D. And last but not least, thanks to my partner in crime, who's been helping me stay on beat business-wise for more than 20 years, Gino Giovanelli. I'm Kathy Hollenhorst. Thanks for listening.